Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
All right, well, welcome back, everybody, to the Gamekeeper Studio here at the Mole Hole. And everybody looks bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning.
Got my green leaf on. What you talking about?
Yeah, it is. Boy, the turkeys are supposed to be gobbling. I hadn't heard one.
No, there was one.
Yeah. So we got, that did sound good. So we got Dudley sitting here, and hey, Lanny, and Austin's over there. Surprised me being here this morning. I think delivered some seed.
Austin has a new mic.
He does? Oh, yeah, cool, Austin. Cool. I can't hear myself.
Yeah. How about that?
Probably supposed to muffle out my Alabama accent.
No, there's nothing you can do about that. About like me saying I'm not going to sound like I'm from Mississippi.
Yeah, you are the pride of Tupelo, Mississippi.
Tupelo?
Well, that's where you're from, isn't it?
Well, I'm from West Point now.
Well, Tupelo was proud of you at one time, I suppose.
I was really born in Tennessee, believe it or not.
Elvis and Lanny Wallace, yeah. Both from Tupelo, Mississippi.
So looking at Dudley, and Dudley is vaccinated now.
Oh, you spilled the beans.
Yeah,
No, we don't have to worry about Dudley being vaccinated.
Did you have the one step or the two step?
I did the one stepper.
Yeah. How was it?
It was pretty harsh.
Was it?
Yeah.
Like the shot, or did you have symptoms?
The next day, I felt like I had the flu for a whole day.
On Saturday.
And it, but it went away.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I'm scheduled.
We'll see.
March 24th, I'm supposed to get mine.
How did Dudley, being the young man that he is, and you being the old man that you are, get in line before
you?
I don't know.
That's a good question, man. Huh. I think Dudley just knows people.
Dudley does.
You got to be in the know.
Yeah, you have to be.
I told them I was on a podcast, and they said, "Oh, well, here's the front of the line. Come on in."
Well, so here's what I think. I think Dudley's vaccinated, and I think you're taking ivermectin, which is a horse dewormer, instead of getting vaccinated. Is that not correct?
No, I'm only going to take ivermectin if I get sick.
Okay.
Isn't that right, Austin?
That's what I
That's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
But I'm just worried about people giving me random shots and not knowing what's in them.
You look wormy.
Yeah, well, it's turkey season. That's what this look is.
Eats organic, takes cow warmer.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So do you guys remember last week, 2 weeks ago, we were kind of cutting up a little bit about David McElwain and his love life, and we called him, you know, a flat brimmer with his hat.
Oh, he got his feelings hurt, didn't he?
You know, and Lanny pointed out some of the good characteristics.
Oh, man, you got it going on.
So we had somebody reach out to me that has an interest in David.
Oh.
We're going to talk about David's love life before youth turkey season.
Well, I guess I got excited there.
I guess you did. You got to jump ahead of the schedule there. But.
Well, so tell me about youth turkey season. I don't have a youth, so
you
I haven't been
you,
involved.
You need to get your youth out there. That's exactly right. It's been pretty non-eventful at this point. But so turkeys.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. Did they gobble this morning?
No. It was interesting, though, because they had been gobbling earlier in the week. So kind of made me go back and think about all the conversations we have of, you know, why? Because up until this point, the mornings have been really cold. There's been some gobbling activity. This morning was the first morning where it was, you know, the sun was beautiful, rising up in that red tent. It was 50 degrees outside. you didn't have to, you know, put your toboggan on to run through the woods. And from what I understand from the six or eight people I've talked to, nobody heard a peep this morning.
Hmm. So it's interesting how that works. You think the conditions are perfect in your mind.
And then they're not.
But then you go as far to talk to all your other buddies who went and listened too, and they share the same report.
But it does make you feel better when they share the same report.
It does.
Because I was sitting there this morning going, man, am I the only unlucky, me and Hayden, the only unlucky group out here today?
It makes you think, maybe, what, did I bump them? Did I do something?
Especially if you've heard them in there so recently as a day or two before.
Oh, I heard them in there yesterday.
Who else has been in here?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Well, how do the turkeys telepathically tell each other that we're not going to gobble this morning, right, even though it's a beautiful day?
I don't know. Something we often ponder here in the Gamekeeper studio this time of year.
I don't think anybody knows the answer to that.
Well, I know that, you know, David Hawley's talked a lot about barometric pressure. What I always do, the old with the sunset, you know, it's like if you've got a beaming red sunset, then maybe they went to bed happy and they're going to gobble in the morning. Of course, that's no science whatsoever. That's just my personal opinion.
It is weird that nobody heard one this morning.
I'm sure a turkey gobbled somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they did.
Yeah, I would think.
They were also not on their feet this morning because I put in 80 miles in the trace and didn't see a single turkey.
Mm. That's pretty serious.
That's pretty hard to do.
That's pretty hard to do on the trace.
So especially this time of year.
Yeah. Is Hayden jacked up? Is he excited?
Yeah, he started yelping, which is going to be pretty – I don't know if it's going to be good or bad. I would suggest when you're when you're taking your young one out there, give them a crow call, you know. And they want to do something, let them crow. He's getting pretty good at that crow call.
So. Oh, wow. Yeah. Just make sure he does it when you want him to do it, not just randomly.
Well, it's better for him to crow call randomly than yelp. Right. You know, randomly.
So I guess y'all have crows following you around in the woods everywhere.
Mm, yeah. You don't – that doesn't happen to you?
No, I try not. They aggravate me.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. You don't like a crow.
Well, I like crows. I'm not. You're not trying to don't do me that way, because I, you know, they're one of God's creatures. I love crows, but they do aggravate me from time to time. They're known to do that. That's one of the characteristics of a crow.
What is a massive group of crows called?
It's called a murder.
Boom.
Of crows.
There you go. Oh, Mr. Know-it-all over there. Where's our sound guy?
So, well, he's asleep.
Thank you, Mr. Know-it-all.
He's asleep. Mike's over there texting somebody. Who knows what he's doing. But so today's show is going to be an interesting one. We've got the guys from Apex Ammunition that will be here to talk to us about turkey shells and chokes. And we got a lot of questions.
Quite appropriate.
Yeah. They've got a great product.
I mean, social media has been nothing but people talking. I mean, every third post I scroll through, there's somebody talking about patterns and loads and 12-gauge versus 410. You know, it's amazing.
Ooh, 12 versus 410.
And it's rare. Know. I mean, things come out all the time every season to help you and do things better. But, you know, then again, every few years, every now and then, a product shows up that revolutionizes the way we're doing things. And that's what these shotgun shells have done.
Mm-hmm.
It really
I think
has.
You're right. I can't wait to talk to him and learn how some of this came to be.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and then we got somebody on the Dateline. Is that right?
I was just going to say, somebody reached out and contacted me, hearing that information and hearing that David was.
Are we going to get
single? Where did David go?
He's over there somewhere.
Okay. Yeah.
Are we going to get to call him?
No, but so now, so his situation causes me to have to do something. So after we described him, I got an email from said person.
Suitor.
Yes, and they asked me a few questions. Did he like romantic comedies and that kind of stuff? You know, what kind of part? Which I answered, and then they
where does he go to church?
And then they said
always an important one.
That was actually a question. Yeah, and then they asked to see a picture of his boat. So,
hey, this person has their priorities in line. Whoever this
is. So before it goes any further, I've got to email them a picture of your boat, David. So if you send that to me, please.
Kind of like our boat, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
And David's just
borrowing it.
That's right. He's leasing it. So, look, I've also, you know, I feel bad that I've been getting you guys with these questions of late.
Yeah.
So I've got a real easy one today.
Oh, okay. I'm sure.
Yeah. And I got a feeling Austin might know the answer to this one.
I'm sure he does. Austin's pretty intellectual.
So here's the scenario, okay?
This is situational.
This is situational, and this should be so easy for you guys. But imagine this: it's kind of late December. It's a Saturday afternoon. You got your young son. All y'all have sons. You got your son with you. You're going to go deer hunting. You leave 30 minutes early, stopping by snacks. You're driving to where you're going to go deer hunting. It's a high pressure day. Cloudless. There's blue skies.
Bluebird.
It's just a beautiful day.
High pressure.
You're riding down the highway going to where you're going.
How cold is it?
It's about 40 degrees.
Right at 40.
You look out across this giant pasture, and there's a bunch of cows. They're all on their feet, and they're all facing the same direction. As a deer hunter, what does that tell you? They're up on their feet. They're all facing the same direction, and they're feeding. As a deer hunter, what goes through your mind? And you turn to your son sitting next to you in the seat, and what do you tell him?
Should have got here earlier.
The cows are hungry.
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Can't fool Dudley.
Oh, man.
Good job, Dudley.
Man.
That's a good one.
Well, I was a little confused because first you said they were all staring in the same direction. Then you said they were all eating, so...
But I did say eating. I said they were standing up.
I thought he said they were facing the same direction too.
Yeah,
I should have said they were grazing in the same direction.
I was fixing to say if they're all looking the same direction, they're watching two bucks fight.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Okay, maybe
that's kind of like that joke of when you drive by the silo and you tell your kid, "I heard somebody died in there."
Trying to find a corner to pee in.
And they say, why? And then you say, he's just trying to find a corner to pee in.
That's a good one. I hadn't heard that one.
You've never heard that?
I've never heard that one.
And I say it so much that, you know, that it gets old, but I have to do it.
Sure. Do you know why they put fences around cemeteries?
Everybody's trying to get in.
They're dying to get in there.
That's right. Not a bad comedy.
Yeah. Well, we're not going
to. You got more of that. You got plenty of that. Bobby's got plenty of that.
Yeah. So, but before we bring it, we've got to get Nick on the phone. I think Nick Charney. And then we've got Jared here in the studio who will be sitting between the turkeys and the guest
room. In studio.
So, before we send Mac outside to get them, Mac's over there texting again. So, Mac, have you got a commercial?
I do. So this week, the more we're talking about podcasts, we're talking about turkeys, I really wanted just to tell people to, send us in what you want to hear. Let us know some topics that you want to talk about.
Absolutely.
So the commercial this week is actually about the podcast. So let us know what you think. Give us some feedback. Like it, subscribe it, share it. I mean, really just we need to know what you guys want to listen to, and we want to give you what you want.
What do you want us to talk about?
Absolutely.
So how do they do that? Social media?
Yeah. I mean, you can send us a... Facebook, Instagram, you can comment on the actual podcast. I mean, however you want to get in touch with us, we're checking it, and we want to make sure that we've got all the topics that you want to listen to and want to learn more about.
Yeah, that's a good one.
What about giving us a good review or just an honest review? I'm not asking people to give a good review if they don't like it.
No, don't review it at all.
What if somebody says that it puts them to sleep like you always talk about?
Well, then we'll know. We'll know. But if we could get a couple of reviews, that'd be great.
Yeah, no, that would help a lot. But I do have one question on that.
All right. Max got a question.
So it's really not in regards to any type of commercial, but you kind of sparked my question. So there's an old sailor saying, red skies at night mean what? And red skies in the morning mean what? Does anybody know the answer to that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
So what is it?
Sailor's delight.
That's right.
That's kind of what I base my turkeys on. That's what I was talking about, the sunset. When I see that sailor's sunset in the evening, I don't know. Maybe because I like the water.
Right. I agree. But that's all I got.
That was a challenging question, Mac.
Yeah. Go back to the drawing board. All right. Well, go get Jared.
And I'm still pissed I didn't get the grizzly bear question, by the way. I'll quit bringing that up maybe next year.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, there's Jared Lewis right there.
In the house, in between the turkeys.
Hey! What's up, guys?
You guys have really hit the world with a splash. I mean, like Dudley was saying, you can't turn on any kind of form of social media and not see something about Apex Ammunition, somebody killing a turkey, somebody killing ducks. And it's remarkable the success that guys are having with your product.
Oh, yes, sir. It's definitely... revolutionized the industry as far as shotgun shells are concerned. It's widened the spectrum out there for what people can use.
How did you guys, I know everybody's going to have questions, but let me just kind of get this kicked off. And we need to get, we got another guest, Nick Charney. We got to get him on the phone. Why don't we go ahead and do that real quick? Landon, can we get Nick on the phone?
Yeah, I think we can if my phone will work.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, while he's getting Nick. Yeah. So y'all are in Columbus, Mississippi, which is 20 miles from here.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And you've
yeah.
been there the whole time. You're a Columbus native.
Yes, sir.
Homeboy.
That? Yeah.
Part of the old GTR.
Pride of Columbus, Mississippi.
Pride of Columbus, Mississippi.
Yeah. Yeah. We started our shop right there on my dad's property. He bought, I think it was about 15 acres. It had a shop already on it. And we had been loading in a heck of a room, probably eighth the size of this. And he opened the doors for us and was very supportive of us from day one. So
did you grow up turkey hunting?
Not much. My dad was a huge deer hunter, mm-hmm. a huge crappie fisherman, bass fisherman.
You know, it's hard to crappie fish hardcore and turkey hunt.
Exactly.
It's a tough one.
He did turkey hunt, but he was more of a crappie fisherman. So
gotcha.
That was his thing.
So how'd you get into this whole ammunition thing?
I started, it's kind of a long story, to be honest with you, man. So I met Nick in like 2015. Nick's obviously in the Air Force. He's in the military. I joined the Guard in 2016. Nick's wife's a pilot. Jason's wife's a pilot. And my wife's a pilot. They're all three in the Air Force.
Gotcha.
You know, Dudley's a pilot as well. Because sometimes we'll go out like to the hunting lease and I'll cut down a tree and Dudley will pilot.
Boy, wait, this is the bad joke episode.
Yeah, okay. All right. I just had to say that.
Sure.
Oh, man. But yeah, so I met Nick in Columbus, and my wife had to move to go to a school. It was a joint Army school called CGSC, and she met a girl there by the name of Susie Lonsberry, right? Well, that's obviously Jason's wife. Well, they became real close, and inherently me and Jason became real close. Well, one day, I went to Army Bullet, right? So where I get my ballistics knowledge is I was a field artillery officer, mm-hmm. right? So we shot artillery 105s and 155 millimeter rounds, 95-pound projectiles on a 155. Up to 30,000 meters with rap, right?
So you no do, big deal.
That's a big bullet.
Yeah, it's a big bullet. It's definitely different from shotgun shells, but yeah. it's on a larger scale. So we used, you know, when you go through artillery bullet, you have to use manual gunnery, right? So you have to calculate using math, you know, all the internal and external ballistics, such as powder temperature, wind speed, wind direction, rotation of the Earth's axis, all this math that culminates into mm-hmm. getting your round within 50 meters of your target.
That's a lot of cipher in there, Bobby. You can handle all that.
50 meters of your target. That's kind of sounds like some of your shooting.
No, there, here you know? We go again.
Yeah. So a lot of it translates, a lot of the artillery aspect translates to the shotgun shell on a lot of smaller scale. Now, it is still apples and oranges, you know, in a way. But it translates. But when I was there, I was a huge duck. I'm still a huge duck hunter. I used to hunt. Me and a buddy while we were there hunted a place called Hackberry Flats. I don't know if y'all are familiar with it, but it's an old DU built public land place right outside of Frederick, Oklahoma. And when I was up in Kansas, I was like, man, I want to get me and my buddies together and let's go down here to Hackberry Flats.
Yeah.
And do a public land duck hunt, and we did. And me, Nick, and Jason sat in a little thin shanty wall house listening to cats fight outside, drinking cold beer and eating hot pizza. And we birthed this idea. And from that time, with $20,000 and 2 months later, we had our FFL and we were going.
Wow, that's cool.
That really is amazing how...
So
I would think there's a lot of hurdles to manufacturing ammunition.
Was the idea when in the duck blind, you know, about wing shooting?
Well, yeah, in a way. I mean, duck hunting, man, probably not so much. Well, I would say in some aspects, turkey, but duck hunting. when they did the ban on lead, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, manufacturers were scrambling to come up with steel shot. And it's gotten better over time, right? Mm-hmm. Up till now. But back when it first started, it was pretty horrible, and guys were still trying to adjust to it. But, you know, still to this day with straight steel loads, you're crippling birds.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
We a lot of time in the duck blind watch them, you know, because when you shoot, you know, you hit a bird, you watch. And a lot of them will get right out there out of sight and then
fall. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's when I kick in. I'm going to get them.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing, being an army bullet, didn't have a dog or nothing, right? And you really, really, one, just from a conservation aspect of, you don't want to lose a wounded bird, right? You don't want to have that. I mean, obviously, it'll go towards something, a coyote or whatever, but it's still something you don't want. And, you know, when you get up and you got to walk through ankle-deep mud, 200 yards after a wounded bird, you realize real quick that, like, hey, like, I'm tired of this.
Yeah.
I want them dead.
There's got to be a better way.
Yeah. So.
And you've already used probably 3 shells on that duck anyway,
right?
You know, before you even get out of the blind to go get it.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, and what I try to equate to guys is, either you can take a $1 shell and shoot it 3 times, or you can take a $4 shell and shoot it once.
Right, makes sense.
So
cool.
So along about this time were the metals that are used in the shells now, was that becoming increasingly popular? Were you guys one of the first to use
TSS?
Yes.
So TSS started, really and truly started making a headway back in 2005 with a mm-hmm. guy by the name of Kyle Smith. He had a website called tungstensupershots.com, and what he would do would sell kits, right? And with these kits, he'd give you like some data and stuff like that. He could sell you everything, but he couldn't sell you powder, right? Because you had to have a hazmat license to ship powder. Right. And it went from there. He tried to patent it. It couldn't be patented because back in the mid to late 90s, Federal, who's, you know, they're patent junkies, they had a patent on high density shells or other objects. Right. So, which expired, I think it expired in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. But he tried to patent it, couldn't get it patented. And then he finally just passed it off to some guys and said, hey, I'm done with this. Y'all do whatever you want. Well, become a hobbyist hand loading thing, right? So if you look at the industry as a whole right now, as far as shotgun shells are concerned, you've got your big players out there. And it's always been about a race to the bottom, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
You know, who can make the cheapest shell, right? And making a $10 shell didn't make sense to a lot of people. They didn't know the benefit behind it, right? They couldn't justify the cost. It's all about who can load the cheapest, most effective shell. And I think that didn't correlate with a lot of folks, right? So.
Well, I know when we got introduced to it, it was people hand loading it. You know, yep. I mean, we had some guys mm-hmm. here that were mm-hmm. hand loading, and it was like, you won't believe what it'll do. And I tell you, the first turkey I shot with it, I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear how it all kind of came about.
Yeah. Would you explain what TSS actually is?
All right. So the TSS is the term that's been around for a long time. It's tungsten super shot. So to be considered tungsten super shot, it's 18 grams or more in density in a pellet. So you've got 4 metals that have been used through years and years of hunting, right? You got steel, which is the most recent, you know, behind tungsten super shot, which is, I believe it's 7.76 grams per cubic centimeter in density, right? Or 7.75. You got next up, you got bismuth, which is 19.78. All right. You got lead, which is 11.34. And then you got tungsten, which is 19.3, right? So density is the key ingredient. So a lot of those densities, that's virgin powder, virgin metal, right? Before you put in your alloys and makes your mixture, right? So when you talk about tungsten pellets or tungsten super shot, it's a tungsten based product with usually has nickel and iron in it to make a tungsten carbide, which will make it one of the hardest metals on earth. You know, usually tungsten without any binders can be brittle. Right. But once you turn it into a carbide, I mean, we use it in military applications all the time. DPICM, Sabo rounds for Sabo rounds for tanks. And of course we got armor piercing rounds in the military. When you step foot overseas, that's all you're carrying.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. I always thought it was just tungsten.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a long time ago when I was shooting the old, the Remington stuff at Ducks and that, what was it? Heavy 13.
Yeah.
Those are all different densities.
Yes.
And I remember early on people were saying, it can get so dense that it weighs too much. And I may be saying the wrong thing here. So you don't get as many pellets. And then a lot of folks were figuring out that these like number nines were, just as effective, if not more, at these longer ranges because it was so dense.
Yeah.
So you could have the smaller pellets to increase your pellet count. We were just so, as from a turkey standpoint or even a duck, we were so hung up on it not being any smaller than a number six.
Right.
And then when people started figuring out that you could use smaller shot and it still be amazingly effective, then you'd have your pellet counts back up to where they needed to be.
Yes.
Because a long time ago, the argument was that, you could fit more lead pellets in that shell.
Yeah.
And so it's just completely changed.
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors. Like density is just one of the factors, right? So when you start looking at these pellets, right? So air is modeled as a fluid, right? So a number nine pellet has the same penetration as a 4-5 lead. But it does not weigh as much as a 4-5 lead. Well, how can it have the same amount of penetration, right? So air is modeled as a fluid. Smaller the surface diameter, the less drag, right? So the more energy it's going to carry past further than a lead 4-5 pellet, right? Also, you got to take account of the hardness of the pellet, right? So lead's going to hit, it's going to smush, create a ripple effect, won't get much penetration. But that number nine pellet, it's hard as a brick. I shoot it at metal backstops. I can scoop it up and reuse it.
Wow.
That's how hard it is. So it's going to hit. It's going to drive through. So those are just some of the factors right there that just kind of play into that also. So
when a guy makes the decision to start using these shells, and obviously a lot of guys are, and we have, we're all fans of it. We've all used it and had success with it. But it brings the question of the traditional choke tubes that we have used historically. Do we need to be looking at, do these shells perform differently out of the standard choke tubes?
Yeah. So as you looking at lead and or bismuth, whatever, both of them are kind of almost in the same range. It's malleable. Right. I can choke it down and the lead will give to the choke. If you choke tungsten down too much, right, it's harder than steel. So, there's a phenomenon called shot bridging. Makes your choke swell in your gun and you don't know why. It's more than likely because of shot bridging. So it happens with duck hunters. And as the bigger shot size you go, the more prevalent it is. So it's when pellets get side by side, try to exit a diameter that's too small, and it just creates undue amount of pressure around the choke tube.
Swells in.
Yeah. So with tungsten, when you get down to the small shot sizes, you don't have to really worry about that. All you're really going to do is blow your pattern out. But with our stuff, we use a thicker wad system, right? Because there's a lot of things that come, like steel shot scores barrels, right? I mean, we all know that. Tungsten will score barrels too. You know what I mean? So we use a thicker wad system, right, in order to protect your barrel to keep that from happening. And, with that inherent, you probably need to open your choke up a little bit. So a lot of guys, traditionally, you're going to shoot a 650. We don't really recommend you going below a 660. Not that it's going to tear your gun up, right? It's not going to tear your choke up. Your pattern is just not going to be optimal.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to start blowing it out, right? So if you ever shot a target with TSS, if you know you're too tight, you're going to walk down there and it's going to look like someone took a handful of TSS and threw it on the target. Like it's just spread everywhere. You're not having a concentration.
If it's too tight, it'll look like that.
Yeah. You got to think about shooting something out of a, how can I say it? It's like pushing a golf ball through a garden hose. You know what I mean? You're just going to pop out. You know, so.
You know, the lead can squish when right. it's coming out of the barrel.
Malleable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's almost like a rebound effect.
Yeah. It's almost just like it's going, you know, and just exploding out of it, right? And you'll see a lot of times guys got a lot of spray. Now, you can tell when you're borderline, right? Because you'll start developing these holes in your pattern, right? You'll start seeing big holes. Sometimes you'll even see the big hole in the center where the pellets will start, you know what I mean, getting ready to go.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, so historically where a guy might have shot a turkey choke that was tighter than a full, he might get a better performance with these shells from a full choke.
I'm trying to
you can't generalize like that. So
no, not really, because you know,
so precise now what they're doing is crazy.
Yeah. You're
talking about 0.65 versus 0.60, is that what you said?
Yeah, 0.660 constriction versus you know, we don't even talk in full or an extra full anymore. We're talking in choked exit diameters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
we're dinosaurs, Bobby. We're still on that. I got the extra full. Well,
I would say it depends on the shell that you're shooting, but with our stuff, we've shot it enough. I mean, we shoot every day. We've seen a lot of patterns, you know, depending on, so you're looking at like a, let's say in a 12 gauge, a 695 is kind of considered a full, and then a 690 is considered like an X full, and a 685 is an extra, extra full, right? So now, once we get past that 685 on down, now we're talking about turkey chokes, you know, 680 and on down. So,
what you shooting, Bobby?
You know, I've got a, I think
a shotgun,
you know, on a 12 gauge that I've got, mm-hmm. I've got two or three of those chokes that just have the numbers on the side of them. And I wish somebody would write on them, you know, this one's pretty tight or this one's
real
this
tight. One's, yeah.
This one's pretty open. Because it gets confusing trying to remember.
Tight, real tight, yeah. Super tight.
Super tight.
Yeah. Super extra tight. Tight.
Yeah. Missed by 30.
And then when you drop to a 20 gauge, it starts all over again.
That's just the bore diameter, but. You know, it gets smaller and smaller the tighter the choke.
Yeah.
You know, so it's 0.695 of an inch, I assume.
Yep.
Well, I know people have asked me, what are you shooting? I'm like, extra full. And they're like, what, you know.
What's your constriction?
Yeah, what's your constriction? I'm like, I got a lot of constrictions.
So, I mean, we've got customers out there, man, that are like, they're super into it.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Well, they're so into it. It is unbelievable.
I got guys getting cut. They get custom. Two guys, both had Mossberg 835s.
Ooh.
Custom, yeah. You had to do the whole shoulder length.
Oh, no nose breaker, boy.
Yeah, man. But they had the guy cut them custom chokes down to the, you know, the 0.001. Like one dude had a 0.682 and the other guy had like a 0.684 cut. And they were putting, with our 3.5 inch number nine, they were putting 650s.
Golly.
But that's what they wanted, you know. So.
And we've been talking about this around the office. Yesterday, Jason McKellar brought his son's shotgun in. It's an old Winchester Ranger 20-gauge pump with just a stock modified barrel. And he shot at the target at 45 yards. And to me, it was a beautiful pattern.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
I mean, complete. So what I was telling him is if my dad and I had shot that same pattern in 1990 – with the old Federal Premium copper plated number fives, mm-hmm. we would have just been overjoyed with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guys shooting these super duper extra full, you know, that may have been too open for them. But to me, somebody that's younger, that doesn't have as much experience, or they're just shooting the bead on the end of their barrel and the turkey is 20 yards away, that may actually be better for most hunters if you plan on keeping it 45 or 50 and in.
Yeah.
Well, and there's so many different ways to think about, you know, how you can skin a cat.
Nothing's worse than a turkey that's about 10 yards. You know, I'm telling you, it's tough.
You're shooting a coke can at him.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
there's so many, you know, just different thought processes. The furthest I've ever shot a turkey in my life is 43 steps. And
that's the furthest?
Yeah. Mm.
You needed a hunt with Lanny.
You know, I'm like, give me a... Give me a 20-gauge with a modified barrel, and man, if a turkey shows up at 12 yards, I don't have to feel like I'm, you know, aiming at his eyeball. Yeah. I'm shaking, or my glasses are fogged like Bobby's gets.
Man, it's really just about... You know, I'm one of the guys that I'm never going to tell a man how to hunt. You know what I mean?
Oh, I don't either.
As long as you're within the bounds of, mm-hmm. of the law, I really do not. You know what I mean? I'm not going to tell you how to do whatever you do. But, man, we get guys from all walks of life. You know what I mean? And there's dudes out there says, man, I don't care about shooting one past 40. Hey, bud, I got a 410 and I'll do that for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or you can open that thing up and you ain't got to worry about him being at 10 yards, right? I had a guy call me one day. He said, he called me and said, hey, man, how far can the 3.5-inch shoot?
There's been a lot of conversation about that.
Yeah, I said, man, I really don't want to sit here and promote long shots to you. And he said, hold up, son. He said, man, I'm married. I got 3 kids. I work 50 hours a week. I hunt South Mississippi public lands.
Oh,
birds are scarce. Mm-hmm. He said, I may get to go 3 to 4 times a year. If I can have him at 70, I want him at 70.
Amen to that.
And I said, you know, okay.
Hey, okay, that's right.
But if you do something like that, right, is TSS capable of it? I mean, nobody can hide.
It can do it.
It can do it. Should you do it? That's up to your personal preference, right?
Absolutely.
I always say this. If you plan on shooting a bird at 70 yards, you better pattern your gun at 70 yards. You need to know, because we all and everybody, if you're harvesting, you owe it to the bird, right?
100%.
And if you don't, if you're just out there slinging shells just to sling it at them, mm-hmm. you're wrong.
That's right.
That's one thing I'll fight tooth and nail over. That's one I get real passionate about that.
Oh, well, you know, I agree 100%.
I mean, we did say that's one of the things I wanted to talk about was that what y'all have done and some others. It's made people feel like they can shoot birds a little bit further, and maybe they can. But you know, the sport of turkey hunting, the whole concept of that is trying to get him in there really close real and knowing tight. What's going on. Now, I totally get it. Sometimes one mm-hmm. hangs up out there, and you feel like you can.
Yeah, that's like that.
A lot of birds get crippled, though, by people not really knowing what their gun can do.
So here's where it saves your butt, right? And I agree. I'm a woodsman guy all day long. I don't live so much for the kill. I love killing them. Don't get me wrong. I want to shoot them in the face, but I love the chase.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love getting on a goblin bird, and you're with your buddy, and y'all are just pumping ideas to each other, trying to figure him out. I mean, heck, I've chased a bird for 2 hours before, and, you know, we didn't kill him. But guess what? I was on top of the world, man.
Had fun doing it.
It was right. awesome. Mm-hmm. So, but where it can save your butt is a lot. Well, you know, we're not built-in laser rangefinders. And you're hunting the field, and the bird is walking. You're probably, he's about 40. You know what I mean? Really, he's about 60. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's saved a lot of folks, right? Especially, mm-hmm. you know. It's given that next tier step up from lead, right? So, you know, if you were to do that with lead, more likely you're going to wound him or he's going to end up running off. Well, you know, during like a lot of guys that call me, you know, they're like, man, he's like, I literally thought he was 40 yards and he was nowhere near that. Right. But I'm glad I was shooting TSS because mm-hmm. he didn't flop.
Yeah, they don't flop. I can tell you that much.
When you're sitting down low on the ground, it's more difficult to judge distance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's a good rule of thumb as you're beginning to sit down, before you actually sit down, to kind of look and have a good idea. Because it's going to look different when you sit down.
I feel like I got to kind of clear my name a little bit because, you know, you made the comment. I'm a 50-yard guy, you know, if he's – That's where my line is.
I agree. But you shoot a lot at 50 yards.
Well, you know, I want to be sure to get
But I think you get so excited, you strafe them.
Well, you know. But I think I would, you know, we've had this conversation a lot, Bobby, but you've been with me several times. And, yeah, I might shoot twice, but what happens every time?
You choke the life out of them.
Nah, I bring them back to the truck. That's what happens.
Speaking about that, so
can't any of them
last year I made a bad mistake of thinking my shotgun was in the back seat, but the youth shotguns in the back.
Ah.
And of course, you get somewhere and it's daylight.
You got to use one with you.
What you got. And I had TSS loads, but I've got a shotgun that's half the length of what I'm used to shooting. Go get on a goblin turkey, shoot one in the woods. Didn't realize how far he was. And it was just a, you know, hammer dead turkey. Walk out there, it ends up being like 47 steps in the woods. And I'm like,
graveyard
day, you know, and yeah. I'm like, dude, that's a stretch for this little gun, you know. But
well, even years ago, we always talk about him waving at the satellite, you know, because when you shot a turkey, he's going to flop and he's going to throw his feet up and he's going, you know, and we always ran up there, and which is taboo now, run up there and grab him, you know, by the feet, because you don't want to get him, you don't want him messing up and flopping around, knocking all the feathers off. Hell, I forgot what I was even going to say.
Welcome to my world. Yeah. So, what I'd like to, we need to get Nick on the phone. So,
yeah.
But is he not picking up?
Well, no.
We're not calling.
We hadn't called.
We just got carried away. We got carried away.
Yeah. All right, we're ready to call Nick.
Yeah, we're going to tell him it's over with.
He just messaged me and said, they calling?
All right, we're ready. We're calling Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more question, though.
Yeah, before we go. Well,
hello,
Nick.
Yeah,
this is Bobby Cone. We got Lanny and Dudley, and
we just now figuring out how to use his phone over here, Nick. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah, Jared.
And awesome. It's all good.
We're sorry about that.
We got into some deep convo, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for joining us, and because we'd love to get you to add your two cents with. So it's Nick Charney, and am I pronouncing your last name right there, Nick?
Yes, sir.
Well, and we're just so excited. We're real proud of you guys. What y'all have done with Apex. It's some fantastic product for sure. But one thing we hadn't talked about, Jared, and I'm so excited that people are beginning to learn to shoot a 20 gauge now for turkeys and for waterfowl as well, that a 20 is plenty, so to speak. And I'd like to get you to talk a little bit about that, what y'all are seeing and why that's working so well.
So like I said, with the densities, you know, that really is one of the big encompassing factors, right? So the shot columns, you know, you're talking about a smaller volume of space that you can take up with weight, right? So it's increasing pellet count. But, you know, heck, I was, you know, Jason Hart was on a podcast the other night with us, and he was talking about, you know, on a 20 gauge number four, right? It's roughly about the same pellets as a 410 of nines, right? So a 1 ounce 410 loaders, 1 ounce of, and 1 ounce of number nine TSS is 360 pellets, right? Number 10s, it's 480 pellets per ounce. 8s, it's 250. 7.5s, it's 215, and so on, right? So you're just getting that massive pellet jump, right? So 20s are out-patterning lead. I'll tell you this, 410s are out-patterning lead right now in 12 gauges. You know, we say 20 is the new 12, when really and truly, I'll be honest with you, a 28 gauge.
That's the one.
That is out of the box with a full choke. It'll blow your mind.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to have one.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you, man. You're talking putting, you know, we make a 28 gauge ounce and 3/8 of 9.5s, right? So give you some data points here. 10s will get 1.5 inch penetration in gel at 50 yards. 9s will get 1.5 inch at 70 yards, 70, 72 yards, right? So, and then you look at, you know, 9 right in the middle is probably 60, 62 yards, right? Yeah. So I'm going to kill a turkey with my 28 gauge putting up, you know, 280, 300 pellets in a 10-inch circle if I wanted to. So why carry a 12 gauge? It's almost obsolete.
Yeah. Somebody's been doing some thinking about
that. Yeah, and I like that.
These guys are serious about this shotgun shell stuff. Well,
the 20 gauge is a lot of fun to shoot. Yeah. And you know, I think I've been shooting a 20 for 6 or 7 years.
For a while. And I'm in the process now of stepping Hayden up from a 410 to a 20. But maybe I shouldn't. You know, maybe you should shoot the 410.
Well, if
you
want, not necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to keep it to you know, 40 and in.
Yeah.
410s all day. Right. I mean, and 20 gauges too. Yeah, I think now with the, you know, let's rewind and then go back, you know, 10 years, right?
you're going to take a kid hunting with a 410 shotgun. Well, you're going to have to call that bird in.
Get him 15, tight.
15, yeah, 20 right. yards. And trying to keep a five-year-old kid still exactly with a bird right. doing that is probably hard unless you're hunting in a blind. But now he can kill him up to 40. You know, we just extended his range. I mean, when we first came out, I've never in my life seen more pictures of kids with first birds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it sure was.
5 years yeah. old.
410, so, 7 years old, yeah. and rolled him.
But that's fascinating that the 410 does that, that it performs so well.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of been, you know, I've known people through the years that have used a 410, and it's kind of like after they've done about every other killed a turkey every yeah. other way, I want to kill one with a 410, and you're thinking 20, 25 yards. But listening to him, that's not the case now.
We used to have riders that want to come and kill them with 410s before pre-TSS, and we knew, you know, how hard we were going to have to work to get it done. And it was a challenge, but not yeah. as much of a challenge anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Jared, these shells are expensive. Can a guy realistically take some dove loads and try to pattern his gun or move his sight in his gun, move his sights, get his gun hitting on paper where he wants it, and then shoot one of your loads? Or does he need to start from the beginning with one of your loads?
Well, so he can, and that's not going to guarantee you the same impact that you're going to get with a different shell, right? So, yeah, he can get it on paper, and he may get it dialed in with a dove load, but he may shoot a TSS through the choke of his choice, and it's a different metal. It's going to interact different. It's a different wadding system. It's going to do different things, right? So he may be off. It's good to use it to get it on paper, but you're going to have to shoot afterward to make sure that you are still home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a guy like Lanny that's kind of cheap.
Yeah.
Kind of cheap. So let me tell you what. You know I'm cheap.
He needs to go ahead and sight that gun in with the shells.
Yeah. And if you want to get even deeper in it, you can try to understand what, you know, have you ever heard a guy talk about dirty bore versus a clean bore?
Muzzle loading for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So same thing can apply with TSS in a lot of aspects, huh. right? So guy called me one day and he said, hey, man, I picked up a 870 20 gauge. I got your shells and Indian Creek 555 choke. Proven setup. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's pretty lights out. Well, he said he shot a 270, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of low. I said, did you clean your gun prior? And he said, yeah. I said, cool. I said, take a choke out, go put in a factory choke, run out there, shoot 25 dove loads through it. Oh, the nastiest ones you can find.
Right. Ones that burn your eyes.
Yeah, exactly. You got to wear safety goggles yeah. and a hard hat. You know what I mean? But yeah, so he did that. Called me back, shot a 320.
Nah.
Right? M2 is polar opposite. Right, M2 is clean bore all day. Stugger 30-20. I had one at the shop. In three shots, the pattern would start dissipating. Right, so it would go from like a 320 down to like a 260, 270 after three shots. Hmm. So you'd have to run a bore snake through it a couple of times.
It is crazy. We're talking about 200-300 pellets in a 10-inch.
Yep.
It's amazing.
20 gauge. Yep.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
So you can
do it. Remember, it was like, oh, we got six.
Yeah, we're good. Got one in the eyeball right there, boy.
It makes me not feel near as good about my 47-yard shot last year with a 20 gauge.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, well, yeah, there were still 290.
Yeah, but guys will call, man, I'm shooting up and left. Well, hey, man, you know, sometimes that, you know, with the choke you're using and the system that you're using, it may interact a totally different than any other shell, right? Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of times you can remedy that if you just back your constriction off, right? Give a little more free flow to that wad.
So, that makes a lot more sense than beating against a truck tire like I've done before.
yeah, you don't want to do that. But man, you can really, all guns are different, all chokes are different. You know what I mean? You know, they're making these products, and they may be off, you know, by a very, like a thousandth of an inch. You know what I mean? You don't know, right?
Yeah, it is so precise. It is just amazing.
It really is. Yeah. You know, back in the, when I was a kid, like 11, 12 years old, I used to go to turkey shoots at Thanksgiving.
And they'd put
a target out there, and you'd take your tightest shooting shotgun, and you would shoot. And whoever had a pellet that got as close to the center would win a turkey.
And we would go, and I had a little 410, and I never won a turkey. But boy, if I could go back in time with some TSS,
all the turkey, you might have even
win some patterning competitions for sure.
Yeah, there was something called card shoots too.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, gotcha. Sure is. Yeah, boy.
We tried to split a card or something.
Well, I think it was how many
you got in the deck of cards.
Yeah, into where the suitor, like the king, would sit. How many pellets you got in that?
Gotcha.
But people would experiment with like really long barrels. And all kinds of stuff.
There was a guy I'll never forget that he had a 12 gauge with a 36 inch barrel, and the gun was called a long tom. It was a single shot 36 inch barrel, and he won the turkey.
He won all the turkeys, huh?
I mean, it was bad.
Yeah, so majority of
your closer.
Yeah, exactly.
Majority of your shotgun shells are tested in a 30 inch barrel, you know, so that allows for one max pressure build, right? Because that's what you're testing for, two things, but velocities and pressures.
What about the fixed chokes? So if a guy's got an older shotgun.
All right, so. And this is okay. So this is where I'm passionate, because this is where TSS really shines. Okay, you got your granddaddy's old gun, fixed modified choke, right? You probably would never think about going turkey hunting with it because your pattern's just not going to be that good, right? So with TSS, I mean, we got a guy in the shop. He got his granddaddy's old guy. I can't remember the model number. It was a Winchester. I think it was made in the 50s or 60s.
Model 12.
37. Maybe. I think maybe a Model 12. I'm not 100% sure. But anyways, he patterned it, right? So 2 3/4 inch gun, I believe. 2 ounce of number nines. And he put 210 hits in a 10-inch circle at 40 yards with a fixed modified.
And ready to go.
And you what you just did is you just revived that gun, right? Yeah. You knocked the dust off of it.
I think Bobby had a little adventure with his 410.
My dad's old 410 that had a full choke, and I shot some TSS out of it. And David was with me. We killed a turkey at about 25 yards.
So what's cool about it is, too, is what we can do, and I don't normally do this for like some guys will show up to the shop and be like, I got this gun, I got this choke. And I'm like, okay. All right, well, I'll tune a load to his setup, right? So when you're looking at a fixed modified choke, what you can do, it's kind of like with waterfowl, what you can do is you can jump the shot size to bigger to make it pattern better, right? Mm. So on setback, those hard, dense pellets are going to push into the walls of that wad, right? And it's going to dig in and cause surface area contact with the barrel on the way out. Not touching the barrel, but pushing the wad against it even harder. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And what that'll do is tighten up that pattern for you. So gotcha. you may not... You know, and this is really odd, but I could take a gun, a fixed modified. Let's just say it's really more prevalent in the smaller gauges, right? It's really easy to do in small gauges, but like in a 12 gauge, what I would do is I'd probably take that modified and I'd probably run, you know, fours, which don't make a whole lot of sense because I'll kill a coyote at 70 yards over tens or nines, right? And I'll give you the pattern density with the nines, but I'll give you the pattern ability with the fours. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Makes complete sense.
It's amazing the
size,
the pellet count with the smaller pellets.
I mean, like Jason's son's 20 gauge with that standard modified, it was way tighter than a standard lead load would have been.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Using tungsten. And just like when they switched from lead to steel in the, you know, in duck hunting eons ago, we were used to shooting full choke. And then when we swapped over to steel, you shot improved because it's a harder, more dense material, and it just naturally threw a tighter pattern.
Yeah, and shot bridging, right? Yeah. So I know Nick, you can explain to them, you know, and a lot of guys don't know this. Nick, you want to explain the fact of why a choke would say lead only?
Yeah, so a lot of you are like, you know how you got those old factory full chokes that say no steel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, with those chokes, they were designed because for lead only, because typically with lead, you're shooting sixes or sevens or, you know, maybe fives, and lead's malleable, right? It can deform. It's softer than the steel barrel. Well, you know, so when we shoot steel, that steel is just as hard as the gun barrel. And those pellets, when we typically shoot steel, are usually fours or bigger, most times threes, twos. When you try to constrict something too tight and those pellets don't get in line, you can get what you call a phenomenon called bridging, where these two pellets can actually interlock. And especially if your steel has impurities in it, like a lot of cheap steel shot does, those two pellets can lock against the barrel. And if you try to force them through the choke tube at once, what you'll often find is that something's got to give. And it's either going to be the steel in the barrel or the steel in the choke tube. And oftentimes over time, you can blow the threads out of your choke tube because something's going to give with all that pressure. And it's going to be the weakest point of the steel, whether it's your barrel, whether it's the pellets in the steel or your choke tube. That's why you see a lot of those factory fulls and a lot of other chokes say like no steel or lead only, because there are oftentimes were built without the concept of smaller, heavier than lead pellets in mind.
So when he's talking about steel with impurities, he's talking about like annealed steel, right? So have you ever cut open a shotgun shell?
A bunch.
What I mean? You look at the steel; it's got slag on it, stuff like that. We don't use anneals. We use a zinc plated steel, right? So it kind of slickens up those pellets, and it gives you a little bit more better pattern ability with your steel shot duck hunting. But we haven't had this conversation yet, talking about justification, right? We're talking about a $10 to $15 turkey shell versus a $2 turkey shell. You want to hear my sales pitch?
You don't have to pitch it to me. I'm in. I'll take them.
I mean, the price of fuel.
So how much is your truck payment a month?
Yeah.
How much is your lease payment? How much is gas? How much is your time worth?
This sounds like we're talking about food prices. 100%.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the biggest thing you can say is your time.
That's exactly right.
Everything that you use in turkey hunting is a tool, right? Up until the ammunition, it's going to do the job, right?
Right.
It's the final chapter. That's the final piece to the puzzle.
I'm as tight as you get, and I'll spend a bite on turkey shells.
Yeah, because think about how many times you shoot. You're really throwing a lot of money. So let me ask this, and Nick, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you're going to, right now, Jared, if somebody said, "Hey, let's go kill an Osceola this weekend," and you grabbed a 12 gauge, which one of y'all's of Apex shells? What's your go to shell for a 12, a 20, and a 14?
You go first, Nick.
Oh man, making it hard on me. I can tell you, I'm not a fan of the 3.5 inch because I just don't like the recoil.
Amen.
And I actually like the 2.25 ounce 3 inch. That's pretty much my favorite. I end up shooting it an 8. It shoots really good out of my 870 with my 12 gauge with my Indian Creek 665. It does tremendous. And my 20 gauge, I got an M2, but you know, I hate to say this publicly, but it's a certain brand that doesn't like to shoot straight sometimes. And so I actually have a Winchester 1300 that I like to use with an Indian Creek 562. I swear you can split a gnat's behind at 40 yards of that thing. It's so straight. And then I use a Remington 1100 for my 410, which is pretty heavy, but I like to use the Ninja 9.5 and the 7/8 ounce, if you will, with my Pattern Master choke tube. It does jam up in it.
All right.
Pretty cool.
So yeah, what about you, Jared?
So 12 gauge, if you're going to be a bear, you might as well be a grizzly. So shoot to 3.5.
Because okay? They don't make fours. Yes.
If you're going to punish yourself, ahead and punish yourself and get you a Mossberg 835, Indian Creek 675, and it's going to put more pellets in there than you can count. All right. For a 20 gauge, I'm going to go M2. I'd say hands down, probably one of the most solid guns made out there as far as like just even a 3 inch, chambered gun, you know, especially in a 12 gauge. So M2 with a Indian Creek 555, and then for a 410, a pointer 410, with a Pattern Master Code Black Turkey. And I like to mix it up a little bit with some small batch 7.5s over 10s.
So, a little cocktail.
Yeah. I got that luxury because I'm at the shop.
So now, guys listening to this, if they're not familiar with y'all, they can go to Apex Munition and then type dot and then COM.
Yes, sir. Apex Munition. We even got the domain Apex Ammunition too, so they can come to that.
You type that in, it'll take you there anyway.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, look, I think we've learned something here. I know today.
Oh yeah. I mean, just the science. You know, we talk about science of food plots all the time. Man, these guys, this is like physics. You know, this is some serious stuff up in here.
It's a lot of it. A lot of physics, man. I mean, it can get even deeper.
I'm glad y'all took the time, because I wouldn't have took the time to do all that. I mean, that's yeah. Bottom line.
Well, I tell you what impresses me the most. Y'all make a great product.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. But y'all also have a great attitude. I love your attitude that you're not encouraging people to take these longer shots. It's better ammunition with a denser pattern, and all that is so much better for the turkey hunter. But, I still want to see guys take good ethical shots at turkeys. Yeah. We don't want to see wounded birds out there.
No, 100%, man. Yep. I mean,
go ahead, Nick.
Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, you know, what's interesting about that too, Bobby, is I think we're going to see a lot of states here in the near future transition to a lot of non-toxic regulations. So, you know, I think lead's just going to continue to be phased out. You know, you look at states like California that's completely non-toxic, and a lot of your public lands in places like Kansas and Illinois have already gone non-toxic. You know, your only sacrifice outside of that is going to be to, you know, shoot heavier than lead if you don't want to go less than lead.
So have y'all ever dove hunted with steel shot?
I bought some Dove steel shells by accident. I was actually buying them for my son, and I looked, I'm like, look at that, they're steel.
Yeah, I did that one time because I had to.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, there's some areas.
They're still at the house.
There's some areas at public around here where you can't shoot lead. Yeah, you gotta shoot steel. At turkeys.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Well.
But tungsten's non-toxic, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
gotta be.
So, I want to create a double barrel that's got your super tight constriction on one barrel and a turkey's at close range.
And a wing shooter on
the next barrel.
Dudes have started doing that, right? So barrel select on an over-under is clutch, man, because you can drop your tight constriction on top.
Yeah.
Barrel select to the bottom for your more open constriction, right? Yeah. And I always tell dudes, I said, look, man, I said, if you're going in the woods, pattern your gun two ways, right? Keep you if you need a tight constriction, keep that, or keep you a loose one in your vest. Don't take you but a second. Twist it on.
So I actually taped up yesterday a little Browning 725 20 gauge for my daughter to shoot. Taped it up. You know, it's such a pretty gun. And I put the mossy oak tape on it. And I've got two different chokes in there for her, a tight one and a more open. So you know, it's going to be interesting to see if she can work that barrel selector. Yeah. I think I'm going to keep it on the top one, which would be the tighter choke. Yeah. But that's kind of the thought process there, Dudley. There.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting.
Okay. I think we're well over an hour. So I think
we've of got course.
Oh, no.
No.
There's no way. Man. We can't talk about anything. We can't talk about lunch for less than an hour. No. I mean, just what.
Well, Jared, we sure have enjoyed having you and Nick here in the studio. We are we're just thrilled to have you guys. We've learned a lot, and we're real proud of the job that you guys do and the product that y'all make. And thank you for coming. We need to have you back on closer to duck season.
Hey, thank y'all for your service, what you've done for the country, for being in Mississippi, all those good things.
Yeah, thank you for remembering that, Lance.
That's huge. It really is. We often take it for granted, especially out here. So.
Yeah, and so anybody listening, you can go to apexmunition.com and check them out. I think you'll be pleased.
Yes, sir.
When your wife's flying, is she in Columbus?
Yes.
So when she's flying around and she happens to see any turkeys in some fields, tell her to drop a pin and holler at her brother. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just a little intel to help.
I will. I mean, you know, after about three gobbles, it's all God's country.
Go.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All right, guys.
Appreciate it, Jared.
Yep.
Okay, well, boy, that was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Very intriguing. Very intriguing. Yeah, I love science, you know, and all that physics stuff.
Those are good guys.
Interesting to say. Yeah, real good guys.
Yeah, not only a good product, but good people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So where are we, Mac? Have we got a Ask Dudley question?
I hope so.
We do. We got a good one. Got a good one this week. So we got Wendy from Missouri. My husband and I are lifelong hunters.
Wait a minute. Wendy from Missouri.
Wendy.
Do you think she could be from the Ozarks?
She is from the Ozarks.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead. My husband and I just bought 50 acres of our own in the Ozarks. Our plan is to retire there and live more off the grid, if you will. Most of it's hilly hardwoods, but about 10 acres is in a little valley of open land on a creek. We'd like to use for trees, food plotting, gardening, and even maybe raise a few pigs for meat. What are some good wildlife trees that the deer can eat and we can eat?
This is the perfect question for Doug Phillips right here. I mean, I don't know. That's just the perfect question.
Yeah. I get a lot of, you know, how do I plant a sawtooth? But, right. You know, when this one's really interesting.
Yeah, this is a good one.
And so, yeah, there's so many ways you can go here. I think a lot of our customers, their dream is to, you know, retire, move out somewhere and live a more simple life. Not all of our folks are, you know, hardcore deer hunters or hardcore turkey hunters. A lot of people just want to be able to do a little bit of everything.
Right.
And so this is a really neat scenario here. I used to be real fascinated with this thing called silvopasture, you know, so you'd plant trees that could be used for mast or timber, but you've also got a crop going underneath it, whether that be hay or beans or, you know, we use food plots like that all the time. We just don't know it. But, you know, Wendy, I think the best thing to do in this scenario, you did say off grid. I'm assuming you're kind of into the whole prepping thing. I would not want to plant a bunch of stuff that's going to require heavy maintenance and spraying and things like that. I would want to plant, you know, heavy on the native side, fruit, nut trees that don't need to be sprayed weekly. This is kind of a multifaceted thing. You're doing this for your deer, your turkeys, yourself. You may run your pigs through there. So here's my list, you know, persimmon, pawpaw, nut trees, pecans, oaks. You know, a lot of people are making flour out of acorns these days. Black cherry, mulberry, plums, chestnuts, why not have some muscadines going?
Come on.
elderberries. And even, you know, if you're food plotting for your deer, you can go out there and pick your brassicas that you planted and eat them too.
I love a biologic brassica. I know Austin.
You
got to
cook them.
No, they're great.
So, Wendy, I think it's a great idea. My main drive home point here is plant stuff that's going to be easy to maintain because, you know, you never know if you may not be able to run to the store or you may not want to go to the store and get a bunch of stuff, that, you know, where you have to manage them so hard. You know, just plant something that can handle your conditions already.
I know everybody's more conscious about what they're spraying on stuff.
Right.
And the picks of all that stuff. So.
And, you know, being that you are in the Ozarks, I assume you're just surrounded by a lot of hardwoods. So you may want to thin some of those hardwoods, make some cover for your critters to hang out in and some, you know, new growth. You could even move your pigs around, get an electric fence and move them around in the woods and let them forage under your trees. I love it.
Thank you, Mr. Know-it-all.
Well, good. Well, Wendy,
I may have to move out there.
Yeah, I want to see her place when she gets it done.
Yeah, Wendy, you may be sure and tell Marty we said hello.
I don't want to have anything to do with this.
I love that her name's Wendy. Yeah. I guess, anyway.
Yeah. Well, good. That's a great answer, Dudley. So, look, this has been a busy podcast. And what do you think when I look at you guys? What, Lanny?
What about, are we ending right now?
Well, I was fixing to say, what did we learn that could help make us be a better
I didn't learn leader? Anything about David McElwain's suitor.
Oh, we need to go back. If you like pina coladas. No, we did.
We're going to save that for next week.
We did touch. I said I have to get a photo of the boat.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you left me hanging a little bit on that. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. Know.
It's we're busy, Lanny. We got a lot going on.
Okay.
I lost where I was now. So, what did y'all learn that would help you be a better gamekeeper?
I know I need to pattern my shotgun more than I do. Is the best way I can put it.
I've been lazy for a long time on that because
me too.
I've been shooting the same shotgun for a decade and a half.
It's a Greenleaf 870, isn't it?
Same.
See, I know what he's shooting.
It works. And I've killed turkeys further than I probably should have been able to with it. But
it's just so much it was so much easier. Five and a full extra full choke. Now they're talking about, I was saying like 0.6, what? Mm. You know, and what? And the nines versus the tens and all that other kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before I just going to go off and shoot something, I need to spend some time with it.
Well, to your point. I spend 90% of my season now either taking my wife or the boys. And I'm way more picky about getting them a better shot where I would just, you know, I'll lay down sideways to get a good shot. Mm-hmm. You can't do that with everybody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, talking about the price of a shell and what's your time worth, now that one shot is worth a whole lot to me because it's really hard to get other people in a position to kill turkeys on a consistent basis. So now I want to make sure this 20 that I've got, you know, that obviously I know will kill a turkey up to 45 yards is the best it can be. You know, it's just tough.
That's a good point.
Make you a better gamekeeper right there.
That's right. You know, a gun is a tool. So, and as we kind of go through these podcasts, we talk about science, we talk about applied science, and then we talk about gamekeeper success. So this one falls in that gamekeeper success for sure. Mm-hmm, but we have taken, or they, the guys at Apex, have taken science to
the
make
next
better
level.
Sales.
Yeah,
they sure have.
It's applied science too, which is, you know, that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it is. Was this one of your favorite podcasts?
Very interesting to me. Listening to them talk about, you know, just the different properties of metals and how they interact. You know, it's good stuff to me. So, and anything that'll make me a better turkey hunter, I'm all ears about.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, does anybody else have anything?
You learn anything, Bobby?
I did. I learned I want to shoot my 410 more at turkeys.
Yeah. When did you start that? A couple of years ago? Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah,
last year?
Two years ago. But, you know, I've got a little 410 I might try this year. Right. But listening to him talk about the pellet count, comparing it to a 12 gauge, that got my interest.
Yeah.
It really did. Because I hadn't shot a 12 gauge in years. So, 410. May get the nod.
Get the nod.
I know those 20s are awful fun to tote compared to the old 12.
I don't think
it's that big of a difference until you've been after the same bird for 2 hours.
You know, I have my traps are always sore after turkey season from carrying a 12 gauge somewhere. Yeah. So it's interesting.
All right. Well,
did Dudley learn anything?
I learned that I'm the same way. I've always shot the same ancient Browning B2000 shiny gun. Covered in tape, but I got a little 20 gauge single shot.
I saw you bring that
older handy rifle.
Isn't it a bottomland?
It is bottomland.
Yeah, I kind of like that bottomland.
I think it's actually kind of collectible, but I can't wait to pattern that thing and get it rolled. No,
collectible,
maybe. Anything in bottomland is
collectible.
It's old and it's in bottomland.
I sold it to him. I want to know why it's collectible.
Wait, you sold somebody a gun that I didn't buy?
I made him a deal for $100.
That's a smoking deal.
$100.
And then he's over there talking about it being collectible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, so I sell stuff to you and don't get paid all the way.
I'm going to pattern it. I'm going to pattern it. I'm
going to
pattern it and kill a couple turkeys with it and put it on GunBroker for $1,000.
Double up.
All right. Well, I'm getting hungry, so.
Cool.
Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Cleve.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife magazine and don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.